Welcome to our seminar. I'm so happy to see you all here. My name is Teija Feldt, and I'm coming from the Ministry of Employment and Economy. And we'll be chairing this national seminar together with my colleague, Raija Merilainen, from the Ministry of Education and Culture. And welcome also to the national and international colleagues who are participating this event online. The seminar is organized by both the Finnish Ministry of Education and Culture, the Finnish Ministry of Employment, and this seminar agenda has been jointly prepared with the National Lifelong Guidance Working Group and the ELGPN Coordinating Unit at the Finnish Institute of Educational Research and the University of Jyväskylä. And this seminar will follow the final meeting of the European Lifelong Guidance Policy Network, and it was held here in Jyväskylä this week on Tuesday and Wednesday. In addition to national delegates, we have here over 60 delegates from the network. Finland has been organizing annual National Lifelong Guidance Policy Seminars since 2002. And they have all been very fruitful mutual learning opportunities, because there has been many sectors, stakeholders, practitioners, and different client group representatives. And this year, we will focus on practice and policy of cross-ministerial cooperation in developing regional one-stop guidance centers and also the use of information and communication technology in the service delivery. We are also introducing examples of policy and practice from Finland and also other ELGPN countries. We take into account also the outcomes of the first e-guidance and e-government seminar, which we had together with the Nordic countries in Estonia 1 month ago. One notice here in the beginning, I have to say that we are ending today at 4 o'clock, so a little bit earlier than you had the information. 4 o'clock. All right, and then we go further. On behalf of Mika Tammilehto, Ulla Till Karlsson, Special Government Advisor from the Ministry of Education, will give the opening address and provide a context for our discussion. All right.
Thank you.
Go on.
Teija. Good morning, everybody. As you heard, I'm replacing Mika Tammilehto, who unfortunately couldn't participate today. I also want to warmly welcome you to this seminar. I'm going in my speech to tell you a little bit about the present government program before we start with the topic of today. All right, this is how the program looks like. We have a quite new government. It started its work in June, and formed the job according to 5 strategic priorities. And the priorities are regarding employment and competitiveness, knowledge and education, well-being and health, bioeconomy and clean solutions, and the fifth one, digitalization, experimentation, and deregulation. This work will be implemented in 26 key projects. This slide also shows you that there are going to happen quite reforms. And the reforms that has to be done in order to make Finland run again. The economic situation is very hard at the moment, and as well as unemployment, and there has to be done some structural reforms. The reforms the government has decided to initiate are the reform of the social welfare and healthcare, and then, as I mentioned, cutting the governmental costs. They are too high at the moment. And then we have to work, the government has to work on the municipality of the future. At the moment, we have around 300 municipalities, and the government is going to look into the structure of this. This is also a regional administration question, and the regional administration will be also reformed, as well as the central administration. The biggest reforms that is taking place is the one about well-being and health. And some weeks ago, the government made a decision on the formation of 18 autonomous regions. This is a very big step in the reorganization of the administration, and by this, the government wants to clarify the level of public administration by having three separate operational levels. Those are the municipality level, and then this autonomous regions, and then the state. And the government also decided to have 15 regions of social care and health care. This is going to affect many other things, but we don't know yet what is going to happen during this autumn. These consequences will be settled down somehow. So I go on to the field of education. As you saw on the previous slide, there are going to be reforms. And that's also the fact about education. But what do we want to achieve with the reforms? What are the 10-year objectives that has to be that we're aiming at? We aim at making Finland a country where lifelong learning is encouraged. We also want that the skills and education levels have risen until 2025. And this will, of course, affect the whole society, which will be renewed in many ways. And Finland has to be a leading country in education, skills, and modern learning techniques. That's what we're striving for. And at the bottom of this slide, you see what are the other key projects in education. We have about learning environments and the reform of vocal upper secondary education and acceleration of transition to working life and some other issues that has to be dealt with. In the reform of the vocational upper secondary education, there are some things that definitely will affect or raise the importance of guidance. And at this slide, I have mentioned all the things that will be involved in the reform. I'm not going to develop them further here, but I want to point out three things that will affect evidently the importance and also the development of different solutions in guidance. We need to develop the interaction between educational institutions and the working life. That's of course very important, that we then have a guidance and counseling system that works. We also, in this reform, we're going to look to the overlaps in education and eliminate those who are there. And of course, the education providers will be encouraged to intensify their activities. And this also has to mean that they have to put emphasis on guidance issues. And learning at the workplace will be increased. This is obviously also a task for the guidance to be considered. This is, you can see there are also other things like the legislation that will be renewed, but we are at the very beginning now. We have just worked for half a year, so there are many things to come yet. All right, then I want to say something about the migration situation in Finland. The issue that and the topic that makes us all anxious and we want the guidance to function well in this situation. If you look at the numbers of the situation in Finland, we haven't had that many asylum seekers during the last 10 years. They have been like 1,500 and 6,000 annually. And last year we only had 3,651. And this year, at the end of November, or at the moment, we have 30,000, and we estimate the amount to be around 35. But is that going to be so? It remains to be seen. The ones who come to Finland come from Iraq. We have 66% Iraqians. And then during the past weeks, the amount of Afghanistans has raised. They are about 14% of those who come. And then we have from Somalia. Of course, since we have had immigration during years, we have built up systems that function quite well. But at this moment, when the amount is so huge proportionally, it's a very big issue for the present government and also for the administration to make a solution that can meet this challenge. Integration education is at the responsibility of the Ministry of Labour and the Economy, but we work very closely, the Ministry of Culture and Education, with the Ministry of Labour and the Economy in this integration education, because, of course, all the institutions are involved and they are under our administration, sort of. And there at the bottom of the slide, you see what we have done since at the system of education. We have all kinds of preparatory education and of course, language education. One thing that we have discovered, if you want to say, is that, of course, as we have discussed at the ELGPN meeting the last 2 days, guidance and counseling is a crucial thing when we think about this asylum situation. So we need to develop more efficient systems and coherent systems, and we need to work together. And at this moment, we are having a project on on developing skills assessments, because we need to know quite early what are the asylum seekers, what educational backgrounds and working experience do they have, and how should we then prepare for in education and at the employment sector to make arrangements in our present systems that also suit this target group. So this development of skills assessment is the one topic we're working on now together with the Ministry of Labour and the Economy, and also with the Ministry of Interior Affairs. So it's about cooperation, and guidance is in focus, has to be in focus when we talk about this theme. Thank you. This was what I wanted to say, and I hope you enjoy this day and that we have some good reflections and that we learn from each other. Thank you.
Thank you, Ulla Chil. It was nice to hear what is happening here in Finland. Now we are going on, and this first session before the lunch, we will focus on the national framework for integrated guidance services and the structures of one-stop guidance centers. Jaana Kettunen and Raimo Vuorinen from the Finnish Institute of Education Research will be working as the facilitators of the discussion during this seminar. Jaana, she has outstanding experience in the research on the technology in guidance, and Raimo, he has been coordinator of the European Lifelong Guidance Policy Network. So they have been analyzing the country response and provide now a short brief on the findings to feed our discussions today. They will also instruct how to use the interactive tools during this event. So, I have over to Jaana and Raimo, please.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning from my behalf as well.
We start from the instructions.
Okay. Well, we want to invite you all today to have your reflections on by using. We've created you a message board where you can find the address on top of this the site. So webpool.fi/osgc. So if you don't remember, it comes from one-stop guidance centers. So if you have mobile devices with you and can access to Wi-Fi, there is also the Wi-Fi username. Wi-Fi is what you can use is the Pavilionki Pro, and the username is LLG 2015, and the password is the same. So we invite you to reflect while we do the presentations and speaks to and feed in some comments that comes to your mind. All questions are welcome. We also will have you some polls as presenters will go on, and you will find from this same message board we invite you to give a vote or poll votes on some periods. So there appears just numbers that to select the number that you want to give the vote. You will notice when you sign into the message board that there is two sides. There is the message side, and when we invite you to do the polls, just switch to the voting side.
And if you don't have a mobile device with the Wi-Fi capability, Outi has some of these devices which you can use, like clicking the votes. So please raise your hand if you need one of those, and she will deliver during these sessions. So the next poll is coming in next 15 minutes, or the first poll. So you have time to get these devices. So the theme of this conference is one-stop guidance centers and developing policy and practice for co-careering. You all know, we all are kindness practitioners. It's important that we briefly discuss what do we mean by different contexts. And we all know that countries have different guidance systems and different settings, different contexts, different cultural settings. So it's quite hard to define what is a one-stop guidance center, because in different countries it might look different. But we've found out one definition about some design principles which can be included when we talk about one-stop guidance centers. And if it's a one-stop center, of course, it means there's a universal access. So it's easy access for those services which are needed in your individual life situation. It's a one-stop center. It has many different options, different types of services, and the focus is on the user. So the customer choice is another second feature, and it means that the ability to decide which one of the services are most appropriate for meeting my individual need, but also the readiness of making decisions and readiness to use different delivery modes or counseling delivery channels. Then one common feature is the integrated services. It could be integrated, there could be collaboration in establishing the common service function and serving infrastructure from different government sectors or different policy field. But the integrated service could mean also that we are integrating information communication technology in modeling the services, so giving the user choice a much wider choice for the individuals. And then one fourth final principle was the accountability. And when countries have been developing the services, they are emphasizing performance-driven or outcome-based services. So when we are looking what is happening, we are not only thinking of the services, but what should be the outcome of the services. And the term co-careering.
Yeah, you noticed on the program that we are using the term co-careering. And by co-careering, what we mean is the shared expertise and meaningful co-construction on career issues that emerge and take place with and among community members. And in this time when we've noticed that the role of technology is increasing and people are increasingly using the social media, that term has appeared and gotten more meaningful context on these days.
And we want to emphasize the personal agency and the perspective of the user. So in a way, like learning, I'm doing the careering, and with using the social media, I'm co-careering together with Jana when we are talking about these issues together with a perspective for future career. And then if we talk about the information communication technology, most of the definition are looking how to integrate the technology within the guidance process. You can deliver career information or career services, self-assessment tools or career tools, but it's also a communication channel, video conferencing, mobile phones, and we can have a synchronous or asynchronous communication within the guidance process. So then we are looking at the ICT from the citizen user perspective. But the wider use of communication technology means also different products and the national infrastructure, and also the content which we are having within the systems. And we had in Tallinn, we were discussing 1 month ago about e-guidance and e-services as such, and the infrastructure, what is needed to have this type of a common platform for different services. So in a way, we are modeling the services, and then this means that we can also use ICT in collecting feedback, information, impact assessment, or assessing the impact of guidance, and then this information is used for reshaping and the design of the services. One of the user-centered approach features or the elements is that we give opportunities for the individuals to have impact on the design, but also the evaluation of the services and evaluation frameworks. And this means that we are using information communication technology in the design. We provide evidence for the design and development policies and feedback mechanisms. So in a way, we are using the ICT as an integrative element of the services. And then being aware of this, we discussed this about 1 year in Rome. We had a European conference on the topic. We were using that data, the outcome, and from Tallinn. But 17 countries from the ELGPN network provided data. What is the current situation in their country? I use this opportunity to thank for the information, and now brief update and summary of the findings.
When we looked at the data, we wanted to focus on what is the variation that it's found among us in different countries. And there is four qualitatively different categories that emerge on this issue. We will get a short impact in few slots today. And if we start from the conceptual framework for integrated guidance services, we can see that there were four different areas where the variation could be seen. It was the approach to one-stop guidance centers, what services they are providing, and policy for one-stop centers, and then the funding.
And the conceptual framework, what we mean is the common understanding of the overall guidance provision, which is shared by the users, designers, and policymakers, how they understand the service.
When we start from the left, what could be said that the most narrowest way on his, we can see that there are one-stop centers are non-existent, and of course then services, there were no mentions, and also policy for one-stop center is currently absent. There is absence on that. Countries express that it's difficult to secure funding for developing integrated guidance services, and it is just the project funding that is sometimes what they can utilize.
Some countries indicated that the development process of the one-stop centers has been a bottom-up process. So there have been local initiatives either from programs or different projects which have emerged to meet the local needs of the services. So the conceptual framework is local. And this implies that there are specific user groups. It might be age group or different groups with specific needs. So the policy for the policy development is emerging, so that we have signals of this type of initiatives, how to integrate the services at the stop centers within the existing services. And as I mentioned, the funding comes from national program, European Union programs, or it could be also from private sources.
In the third group, we can see that one-stop centers they've grown. They are not only local, but they exist in local and regional levels. And now services have moved, not serving only one specific group, but variety of groups. And the policy for one-stop centers is now existing, but it's very much sectorial. And funding is not now, it is co-funding. There is some state funding and there is national funding, but sometimes also projects funding. So it's a co-funded model.
And then as an outcome of mutual policy learning during the last 15 years among like 55 countries, countries have been sharing experiences in the policy practice and policy development. And we have examples of countries in Europe, but also outside of Europe, who have created like a national strategy for lifelong guidance services. As an outcome of the European Lifelong Guidance Policy Network, we can identify over 10 countries which have a specific national lifelong guidance strategy or have included lifelong guidance within education and labour market or employment policies. So this means that if you have a national framework for guidance, you countries are thinking about the different delivery modes or different mechanisms. So in a way, the services have a lifelong learning perspective. We have either an all-age services, or there's another definition, we have services for all age groups, and this has a slightly different meaning within the national policies. But the idea is that the development of the centres and delivery mechanisms is part of the national policy. So the policy, one important feature is that it's cross-sectoral. It's jointly agreed by different government sectors, and this means that the funding might come from different sources, but there are signals that it's state-coordinated. And today we are having examples from different countries. We invited some countries to showcase some of the information, and they will feed our discussions what we are having after the presentation. And while you have now been testing the online interactive system, I'm inviting you to test it, but also for the global audience, if you identify where you come from, we can get how many global participants we have at this event.
Yes, I know it's very challenging to be the first one, as we can see the wall, but I invite you to just tell the country where you're from and maybe city. I think it's very interesting to see who we are and where we are from. And I assure you that even that it asks your name when you sign in, when you go there in first time, the messages are anonymous.
And we have been informing this to all the European Union member countries, but also Korea, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, United States, Canada. In the United States, the Thanksgiving Day today, so I'm not sure or during this time, so I'm not sure whether they are in their families. It's important to have the balance, but I'm welcoming all the international delegates. Thank you.
Thank you, Jaana and Raimo. Now there are coming people and places. Great, it's working. Yes. All right. Now we will move on to the national case studies. And you will find also some background information of the national case studies in this conference handout. And I hope you have all taken it when you arrived and came in to this place. All right. In each session today we will hear the country case presentation, and after that we will have discussions in small groups. All right. How many? Quite many. Many countries. Finland is many times there. Also Germany. Vilnius. Yes. Great. The first case from Finland will be presented by Dr. Pasi Savonmäki. He is the project manager of the National Meeting Site Project. It is Kohtaamo in Finnish. And this Kohtaamo supports the development of regional one-stop guidance centers. And we say it in Finnish that they are Ohjaamo. Last 8 years, Pasi has worked in PES Personnel Development and Training Unit, and he has also been consulting regional lifelong guidance networks in Finland, and also conducted research on the operation model of one-stop guidance center. I hand over to you, Pasi.
Okay, good morning, everybody. My name is Pasi Savonmäki from the Meeting Site Project, and this project is funded by European Social Fund. We have 7 workers, and we are coordinating one-stop guidance centers in Finland. I know that among the audience there's very many one-stop guidance centers personnel, so you can correct and complete my presentation. Firstly, I want to describe why we need one-stop guidance centers just now in Finland. Secondly, I will describe what are the main principles and basis concerning this kind of operation model in youth guidance. Thirdly, I will take the client point of view. What will one-stop guidance centers offer to young people? So what's the added value for young people? My fourth aim is to show our vision after this project, especially how we can continue this kind of model and how this model could be a sustainable part of our guidance system. And finally, I want to highlight connections between one-stop guidance centers, implementation, and national lifelong guidance strategies in Finland. Okay, let's start asking why. Two simple answers. First, we want to offer better service for youth by combining these services together. And second simple answer is that we have lack of resources. We have pressures to spare resources. But above all, there's a goal: integrating young people to the society, education or work. This is the goal above all. The idea of one-stop guidance centers has grown and strengthened maybe during the last 10 years. We have discussed and also built many kind of multi-professional services also for young people. And one of the biggest problems in these experiments has been the sectoral thinking and borders between workers from different work cultures. So this has been going on maybe last decade. So what's different now? What's the difference? Now we have, let me say, common vision and support from ministries toward this kind of service. And I would say that ministries have found each other. From the administrative point of view, the cooperation of ministries has grounded the basis. And it means we are going to from lifelong guidance strategies toward policy implementation. So I think that we have more power behind these actions. And it helps youth guarantee implementation. It helps this public-private people partnership, which means the bottom-up participative strategies. It helps also take into account this cross-sectoral service needs of the youth, which is central in this implementation. Okay, and then meeting site project. We have two guidelines. First is supporting one-stop guidance centers and disseminating this operation model. And this is the issue of my presentation now. And the second goal, the second guideline is this web-based service, and we will be discussed it in the afternoon. So my presentation is this first guideline. And above all, we have to remember is helping young people under 30 years old to reach educational work. Then the cornerstones. Basis of this service is needs of the young people. It's not surprise. And we are talking also about low threshold service. It's some kind of principle. It's called also low access service. And one key question is how we can reach youth and especially those who need help in career guidance. And also from another point of view, how can young people find this service? So there's two questions. Then cross-sectoral service in guidance, multi-professional service. And then main aim is to help young people find pathways to educational work, supporting participation, and we also have to keep in mind this operation model in these centers is based on agreements between organizations. Signed agreements, but agreements still. And also, it's worth mentioning that one-stop guidance centers do not replace any current service. Rather, it complements these services, because we all know that there's no extra resources for in the long run for public services. Okay, let's look at the map. These circles in this map represent areas where young people are centering during next decade. And of course it means pressure toward guidance services also. Green color represents those municipalities which are developing in a way or another this operating model, this one-stop guidance centers model. And we have counted to 85 municipalities. This regional expanding is not an easy task. For example, in small municipalities, these services are far apart. But our main focus is in these circles. And then, how about the model itself? We can describe this operation model with this kind of figures. We have three figures here. We can see how these centers differ from each other, and we can see the development is in this operation model. First case, on our left, we can see only few services together and quite loose network. In the middle, second case, we can see more services, but still quite loose coupling. They are together, but still maybe they have their own point of view in their services. Maybe we can view that they are working side by side, but together. And then, third case, on our right hand. Tight bonding. And we can guess that in this tight network, these providers have found the same focus, and maybe they have found the client point of view in their services. So, different bonding and different amount of actors. And there are many reasons for this development and these phases. Okay, you can read those services, the health, public employment services, outreach, youth work, social services, information and counseling and study counseling and so on. Okay, now you have to wake up. First poll question.
So if you go now to the polling site, we have the question, what is most important for the success of a guidance center operation from your perspective? What do you think? Common work approach, youth participation, third sector participation, the coordination of the services. There's not wrong or right answer.
Among those four.
Yeah, among those four. Yeah. What do you think is most important?
Do you want the number?
Number. We have 50 votes. 52 votes. 60 votes.
Yeah.
I invite also the international audience to use the internet for voting. So, Pasi, what do you think? We got most of the participants are suggesting that the most important feature or the issue is the coordination of the services is based on an agreement between providers. So, how do you reflect?
You believe in agreements? Okay, we have to go on. So, what do these one-stop guidance centers offer to young people? What do they do in those centers? Of course, the public services is the core of these centers. But beside them, we need civil society organizations, working life cooperation, enterprises, companies. Also, we need peer groups, space for self-directed activities, events, also volunteers maybe, and so on. Without these activities, the one-stop guidance center is not complete. And the main point is that you can come with any question and be sure that your issue is progressing somehow with this same door opening. And of course, you can come without any question, just wondering. After all, young people often need many kinds of support and help and guidance. This is one-stop guidance center from the youth point of view. The idea of services is that one-stop guidance center is open for everybody, not only for those who are in somehow in bad situation or already has become marginalized. So it means one door, many services. And the decisive thing is the links between this one-stop guidance center and those host organizations around these centers. There must be good links and connections. Without this, it doesn't work. And then second poll question.
We are continuing with the youth perspective. What do you think is the most important in the guidance services for the users, for the customers, that they are available in different delivery modes, they are available face-to-face, the competencies and expertise of the staff members, or that they are fast services? While people are voting, but you have been studying about the user needs, so you can also reflect how does this sound based in the light of your own findings.
There's a room full of experts.
Maybe.
Okay, what's our vision? What's our goal? Our vision is to creating this model together with one-stop guidance centers in Finland. Then our goal is distributing, establishing, ensuring, and ensuring funding, of course. And we have to see these centers as a permanent part of our guidance system. And this matching with this web-based guidance is also important, and we discuss it in the afternoon. And in the long run, it's also for other age groups. And then finally, connections to lifelong guidance strategies in Finland. Equal access to challenges is these smaller municipalities, this web-based guidance, which is the answer in this equal access. Care management skills, we have to support and participate young people. Then the competence. I think that this operating model itself creates learning. Workers have to think another way. They can't think from their own service point of view. And of course they have to think together. And that's very promising. And I think this creates competence also. Quality assurance. It seems that we have to show evidence. We have to show numbers. We have to show benefits. There's no funding if we can't show the benefits. It belongs to that quality assurance also. And then these cross-sectoral, this coordination and policy development. We see one-stop guidance centers, that one-stop guidance centers is one possibility to coordinate these guidance services regionally also. Okay. Let's sum up. This project is only in the beginning. We have many tensions, many challenges. We have a lot to do. But one-stop guidance center is one step on our pathway from lifelong guidance strategies toward policy implementation. It's a challenging step, but I think that step by step we can see the change. And the change means better service together for our youth. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Pasi. And now there is a little time for some questions if you want to ask. Yes. Microphone.
And please identify who you are when you present the question.
Yes. It's not open.
Testing, testing.
So, test successful. My name is Susanne Kratz. I'm working in the European Parliament, and before that I worked in the European Commission. And I have been cooperating with the European Lifelong Guidance Policy Network since some years. I find this initiative quite interesting and good, and I think who can be against one-stop shop centers for young people, isn't it? So the more centers, the better. My question is, which is very practical and operational. So, who steers the young people to which service within the center? So, for example, do young unemployment people go to the public employment service person responsible, and this person sends them to the career guidance service if necessary? Mm-hmm. Or do you have plan a reception desk, and then the needs are clarified and the person is going to be sent around? And a second question, if I got it right, you plan a two-step approach. So the first step is not a one-stop shop, but more a gateway. So you do not have yet all services under one roof, but you have agreements, or do you manage to get the representatives from all services under one roof so that a young person can simply go around? And that would be then a real one-stop shop in one house. Mm-hmm. I just would be interested to get a bit more information on the steps you plan. Thank you.
Mm. Okay. As I said, there's straight connections between one-stop guidance center and these host organizations. There is, and under the same roof, there's only two or maybe one or two or three workers from these host organizations under the same roof. And they, of course, these host organizations, they also, of course, have to develop their own services there. Your first question was that where they're coming from. According to this low threshold principle, you can come from your own opinion. You can come to that one-stop guidance center, and there's no straight rules if you have sent there or you come by yourself. There's no straight rules. Maybe we are just wondering what's the best way to handle these clients. And so maybe we have a lack of experience in this, because this is only in the beginning. But as I said, among this audience, there's very many informants who could answer better.
So thank you. And we go on because we have time limit. So I was sitting here and looking you and make a note that it was year 2005 when we start to do together with guidance and counseling in the ministry level. So it's 10 years back we start this. It's nice to sit here and notice that kind of thing. 10 years, it's quite a long time to doing together, but it's good time. So, now we are going to case two. Skill Development Scotland is a unique example of national development which integrates the education and development policies in the national economy and skills strategy. Skills Development Scotland is often acknowledged among European colleagues, also on their emphasis on the national and local partnership. Ms. Sandra Chine, the manager of the National Government Relations, will introduce the process how they have improved the service of the Scotland. Sandra has held a number of roles with the guidance sectors in Scotland. It's my calf, please. There. It's my calf. Yes, thank you. Yeah, thank you. With Career Scotland, they held the senior position in the regional employability and business development. And with the formal of skills development Scotland, she took the position of manager of national government relationship. For example, Sandra has been lead for the development and implementing implementing of the career management skills framework for Scotland, and with skills development Scotland and with partners. And Sandra has making also many development work and support the workforce with the wider career development sectors in Scotland. And she has also working closely with the UK Careers Development Institute to deliver on cheese. So I hand over Miss Chine, please.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for inviting Scotland to participate in your conference. I'm going to very briefly, I'm from Glasgow and Glaswegians speak very fast, but I think I'll be speaking even faster today to give you a very, very brief overview of what we are trying to achieve in Scotland around skills and particularly career management skills. I've entitled the presentation Aligning the Planets because that's what we feel we've been doing in Scotland, that a lot of policies are starting to align together and some wee planets that fell off a couple of years ago are coming back into line for what we're trying to achieve. So government policy is a primary driver of what we do. We're a central organisation in Scotland to deliver on economic growth ambitions. A series of skills and economic strategies combined together to allow us to deliver and interlink our services for our customers. As with other speakers today, we are still evolving our service and I don't think we'll ever be finished evolving it. But we have a very close Scottish government who are investing in what we do and are appreciating what we do in Scotland around particularly career management skills. We have a dynamic and a diverse labour market, and we have to ensure that all our customers have access to that dynamic labour market. So what we do is the right thing to do, because why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we want everybody in our country to participate in a vibrant economy? This is the skills model diagram that we use in Scotland to basically describe what we do in our services. Guidance is the bit that makes a real difference in this cycle, because it's the bit that we target to those who most need it so that they can participate in society. In Scotland, we believe via career management skills and career guidance, people contribute and we have a fairer society. The government in this diagram expects us to be joined up, and we are in a privileged position in Skills Development Scotland that on the side that is my expertise, the individuals, via careers, information, advice and guidance and the development of career management skills, we empower young people and adults who work with us to take all the opportunities that the employers on the other side have to offer. Working around this diagram, it means that employers have an understanding of where young people are coming from and what they have to do to get young people to contribute to their workplaces. And young people get a real understanding of what employers are looking for. And I'll touch later on how we're trying to get young people to really start to develop their workplace skills long before they leave school. This is the vision or the model that we've been using in our evolving careers information advice and guidance services. And basically, as security lies not in employment, but it lies in employability. And this required for us to define a new model of career, and it was redefined as the individual's lifelong progression in learning and work. So career guidance for us moved from being a single event focused on choosing a career to a continuous process of enabling someone to construct a career. This puts greater emphasis on the individual as an active agent in that process rather than a passive recipient of the guidance process. Before the latest phase of government policy, we had already started to move our services to a differentiated model. But recent government strategies and frameworks have basically endorsed what we're trying to do. and we've moved to more a universal offer and a targeted offer, which we ensure we have a coaching approach to careers information advice and guidance and career management skills, and I'll give you a flavour of that as I go through. The reason I'm here today and the reason we've modelled our careers information model is we take on board international views, so it's critical that we hear what other people are doing and get feedback on what people think we are doing in Scotland, because we don't get it right on our own. As you know, this is an OECD slide and it's about what makes a good careers information advice and guidance service, and we've been looking at this and trying to mark ourselves against this. I think you can see it's two paler blue in the middle, programmes for young people to develop their career management skills and comprehensive and integrated education, occupation and labour market information. That is the area of policy where we are just moving into a phase two on. We've developed a wide resource for all our advisors on career management skills, and we're facilitating a self-assessment process for our customers so that they self-evaluate where they are on their career management skills, and that's facilitated by the careers advisor. We have over 60 group activities on career management skills that our advisors can piece together to deliver to their group work sessions in schools. And we have numerous advisor and school and post-school resources for them to use. Just now, and I'll touch on it again, we are moving into career-long continuous professional development for teachers, and again we're starting to build career management skills resources for teachers to use in school, and that'll be one of the questions that I might pose to you at the end of what you think of what we're doing there. This is the Scottish view of what we're trying to do, and career management skills sits very much in health and wellbeing in all our schools and all our school policies. The image of the passive recipient, as I mentioned before, was someone who accepted their circumstances. And in the last economic downturn, youth unemployment was very high in Scotland. In 1 year, it was actually the equivalent of one whole school opening their doors and every single young person from that school walking out into unemployment. I'm glad to say that over the last number of years, we have changed that round to now that 93% of young people leave school into a positive destination. We can still always improve on 93%. I've put the word happiness up there because I like to describe that around career management skills. If you know yourself, know your strengths, know your interests, know what's out there in the world of work for you, and you're in the right place, you choose the right job or the right career, would you not be happy? We spend 8 hours minimum a day at work. We would not want to be in a place that we're happy and doing that, that fits who we are and what we want to be. So for us, career management skills is about happiness. And that's what we try to get that message across to our young people. In 2009, Stirling University did a report on youth unemployment and actually used the term scar. Youth unemployment is a scar for an economy. Young people who experience unemployment immediately after leaving school are more likely to re-experience unemployment as they go into adulthood, and that's the one thing we want to ensure doesn't happen. We want people to realise that they can take control of their circumstances and they don't have to accept unemployment or the circumstances that they're in. And what we put across to them is that career management skills allows you to take control of your circumstances. I mentioned aligning the planets, and these are the foundations of where our planet shift has taken in Scotland. Skills for Scotland basically put down where the economy wanted to be in Scotland over the next number of years. We had a careers information advice and guidance strategy which allowed us to pin all the work that we do in Scotland on, so all our developing on career management skills or our developing on ensuring young people understand the labour market. We developed our career management skills framework in 2012, and the last number of years we've been ensuring in Skills Development Scotland that all our careers advisors understand our position on career management skills and have the resource to deliver on that. And I will say that's been a hard couple of years, and we're just turning a corner on that. Opportunities for All is what takes young people from school to the world of work. Yesterday I heard people mention a youth guarantee and a guarantee, and Scotland Opportunities for All is our guarantee for young people. As I mentioned, youth unemployment is a scar, so the government is heavily investing in youth employment strategies to ensure that young people do not leave school into nothing and sitting in home doing nothing, because then we have depression, we have lack of confidence, and we have sad young people. In Skills Development Scotland ourselves, we are developing a youth talent programme where we're actually bringing young people into our organisation to help us shape what we deliver, but engage with us in their career pathways. And it was mentioned at the beginning, we are currently working with the UK Career Development Institute to develop modern apprenticeships in the career development sector. So we are planning next year, if all goes well, that next year we'll have young people starting at a level three straight from school and coming in to work in the career development sector. And that will be under support roles. And we will have a level four for our experienced staff, that if they go through that, they will then gain access to the university qualification to then go through that and become a fully qualified careers advisor. So we're creating new routes and pathways for careers information guidance in our sector. GIRFECT is basically getting it right for every child, and it's a policy that we have in Scotland to ensure that no young person is left behind, and that we ensure that all our practices and our policies ensure that everything is accessible to young people. And that's just been put in statute by the Children and Young Persons Act 2014. In 2014, we also reviewed our career management skills framework and checked, were we going in the right direction with it? And we had Tristram Hooley from the International Guidance Centre at Derby University come and review our framework. And he basically told us, yep, you're going the right way, you've come a long way, but there's still things you can do. And one of the things he asked us to do was, how can we make sure that career management skills are central to curriculum for excellence in our schools? And we've been basically chapping on the door of curriculum excellence for a number of years now. Developing skills in schools is crucial, and career management skills is part of health and wellbeing under Curriculum 4 in schools. And this is the policy area in schools that is to shape young people's skills for learning, life and work. Now, what I would say that schools have concentrated very much on their learning and life, but the skills for work was a wee planet that was put aside for a while. And the reason for that was that building the Curriculum 5 came into being, and that was all about the exams and the new exams in Scotland. So schools spent a lot of time making sure that they were ready for the national exams that were coming in last year. So that put aside our wee planet that we worried about. We believe now that the Career Management Skills Framework brings building the Curriculum 4 back onto the agenda for us. And I think we now have the poll. Do I just click across? Yep.
Comes up with the CMS frame.
So the poll question is that we have been talking about career management skills. We launched a tool on Tuesday about career management policies by the ELGPN. So the question for you is, at what level of education should pupils or students start learning career management skills? In primary, secondary level, upper secondary, or in higher education? How does this relate to Scotland?
I'm glad to see that poll result, because that is the direction we are travelling in Scotland, so thank you. That would have been worried if it had been something different. Okay. Okay. I'm now going to very quickly run through how we have shaped the delivery of careers information advice and guidance in Scotland to have an understanding of how we target and offer a universal offer. We segment our customers into specific groups. So we have school pupils, unemployed young people at that transition from school, 15 to 19. We also work with young people 17 to 19 who may have gone into a positive destination on leaving school, but something's gone wrong on that, so they are still gathered in. We work with further education colleges for young people on low-level courses, and again, young people on a chaotic background on these courses who may need support. And we have advisors working with 20-plus adults, and we work with Job Centre Plus on integrating employment and skills approach, and that's for long-term unemployed. And PACE is our partner action for continuous employment, and that's when there's high-scale redundancy situations. A group of our advisors will go into employers' premises and offer careers information, advice and guides to employees on the premises with partners. Recently we had that in Aberdeen, where the oil and gas industry took a quite significant tumble recently, and we had to have advisors involved in that. Again, I can speak to anyone separately around the different groupings. I can't go into detail just now because of time. Within our customer groups, we prioritise our customers to under three levels. And Mika yesterday described the three service lines described in the one-stop shop model. And I would say this is quite similar. So customers not ready to access our services. These would be young people and young adults who need to work with multi-agencies, who come from a chaotic background, maybe alcohol, drug misuse, and there's so much going on in their life just now that career guidance is not their focus. So they would work with a partner agency, but we would keep them close so that they're ready for a referral to us when that young person's ready. Customers at varying levels of risk of not achieving opportunity, we deem these as maximum customers and medium customers. Our maximum customers may be young people from a looked after and accommodated background, so young people in the care system, or maybe young people who have an offending background, who have come from our young offenders institutions. Our medium level young people may be young people who have very low confidence, because again, that can actually be quite a crippling thing for our young people in Scotland. We have lots of young people with low confidence. Young people who have had interrupted learning, and that might be young people from a traveller population, or young people due to health have missed a lot of schooling. It can be asylum seekers and refugee young people, particularly under 18s who are unaccompanied asylum seekers coming to Scotland. And again, a variety of maybe health and disabilities that maybe affect a young person making a smooth transition from school. Our customers at minimum risk receive our universal offer, and that's our My World of Work service and our group themed services in schools. This whole process is a system-generated process from our data hub, but in our schools we work very closely with the teachers to validate what comes out of the system to ensure that we offer the right service to the right young person at the right time. So, for example, a young person who, from a looked-after background, might come out as being maximum service offer, but the school might say to us, this young person is doing really well in school, they've got a really supportive foster family, everything's going well for them, so we would hang back to a lower-level service, but keep them on our radar as a young person who is still at risk. So that's how we ensure that our validation is done. Our career management skills framework, as I said, we developed that and launched it in 2012. There are four themes in our framework: self, strengths, horizons and networks. And that is a common language you will hear in schools now in Scotland and by all our careers advisors. That are the themes that we're getting young people to understand. I noticed one of the questions on the slide mentioned young people volunteering in centres. We have young volunteers in our schools called My World of Work Ambassadors, and they do peer-to-peer teaching with their peers around the use of My World of Work and what career management skills are. And they also deliver sessions to parents in schools to get them to understand My World of Work and career management skills. So we're really starting to get our young people to understand these four themes. There are 17 competencies under the themes. The self-competencies are enable a young person to develop a sense of self and society. Who am I and what am I and where do I want to be? Strengths, competencies that enable individuals to acquire and build on their strengths in order to pursue rewarding careers. Horizons, competencies that enable individuals to visualise, plan and achieve their careers. And that's throughout their lifetime. and networks competencies that enable individuals to work and live effectively with others. For lots of young people, building a network is crucial, and also getting away from the wrong network is also a skill that they have to learn. In some areas of Scotland, there's a gang culture, and how do you get a young person to manoeuvre themselves out of that if they're the young person who wants to go on and achieve something? And we work closely with partners to do that. Our career management skills resource, as I said, we have a huge resource for our advisors now. Our My World of Work website, we have mapped the career management skills competencies to every article and video clip on the website. So CMS can actually be a search mechanism. So if you're working with a young person and you want to find some digital resource, you can put in the CMS competency and it will start to pull out resource that you can use with that young person. We developed masterclasses with our careers advisors to ensure that they understood career management skills, and we have an academy module programme for all our advisors from new starts to experienced staff to ensure that they have bought in and understand, and we can ensure that they are quality assured for the work we do with young people. We have been working with the Scottish Consortium for Learning Disabilities to ensure that we develop career management skills in our young people with additional support needs, and we've developed a career management skills assessment process for them. I'll run through quickly. We have a coaching approach to careers guidance in Scotland, and that's basically to ensure that we delve deep, if you see the iceberg there, to ensure that we're not just giving advice and information, but we're delving deep to what are the issues that meet and the barriers that may be stopping someone moving on and continuing to move on, and that we start to address them via career management skills. We have an observation framework with our staff to ensure that they are following our coaching approach, and we coach for high performance through peer-to-peer support and observation by our supervisors. My World of Work is changing every day, and we're evolving it to make it more of a personal online experience. The more information you put into your My World of Work account, the more resource it will actually push towards you. A bit like when you shop on Amazon, you buy a CD and it suggests another CD to you. We're kind of trying to do that on My World of Work. This complements our face-to-face and our contact centre, and it's very much about the acquisition of career management skills. As I said, every resource on My World of Work is mapped to career management skills. So as I said, we're building on solid foundations of policy. The time is right in our youth strategy, and the time is right that building the curriculum four is back on the agenda in our schools, and we need to do more. And we're doing more by a new policy that's come out, the Commission for Developing Scotland's Young Workforce. And the Commission, which came out in November last year and was published this year, basically said that we are simply not preparing or equipping our young people for the world of work. We're doing a lot, but we're not getting employers in there early enough, and we're not actually delivering career guidance early enough to young people, and we need more career education at an early age. So your poll is music to my ears that you're agreeing we have to go further down the school. We're looking to co-design with parents, and we've developed a nutshell programme with Education Scotland to help parents have a parallel resource to work with their children. We're developing a practitioner co-design with teachers. With employers, we are developing foundation apprenticeships where a young person can start an apprenticeship programme whilst they're still at school and continue with that post-school. It's one of their curricular choices. We had 72 young people do that this year. Next year, our ambition is 400 young people in schools with six different sectors involved in that. We are taking careers guidance down into primary school, primary 7 into S1 transition. And we've developed a series of I can statements where we plan to, from primary school to secondary school, deeper and deeper and deeper dive into career management skills with young people so that each stage they know where they should be, what I can do. And the reason we're bringing employers into school and starting on foundation apprenticeships is, why would we ask a young person to choose what they want to be when we don't give them a wee dose of it first? And I like to finish with this slide because I think this epitomises what we're trying to do in Scotland. And this was Chris Hadfield, the commander of the International Space Station. And this was young people who tweeted to him whilst he was in the space station asking him for some careers advice as an astronaut. And he said to them, look at who you want to be and start sculpting yourself into that person. Don't let life randomly kick you into the adult you don't want to become. So in Scotland, our coaching approach to guidance, our career management skills, identification and development, knowledge of the now and the future world of work, working with schools, working with employers and working with parents, and doing that at an earlier age, we plan to guide and facilitate our young people into the adults that they want to become and that they want to own. And if you think of the horizon that Chris Hadfield had from the space station, would we not want a similar personal, spectacular horizon in the world of work for our own young people? Thank you.
Thank you very much. You are very quick. I must say. Perfect, yes. We will go on because we will have discussion after the next case. And this second case is from Croatia. And Croatia is an example of countries which have been systemically developing their national career services in cooperation with different government sectors. And they have also been participating actively in European cooperation within the ELGPN network. Miss Mirjana Cesarevic is working as Assistant Director General of the Croatian Employment Service and is responsible for the sector of the labour market and active policy measures. And lifelong career guidance has been in the focus of her working life quite a long time. And for the last several years, she's been working on several projects, and including lifelong career guidance centers in Croatia and national e-guidance portal. And she will introduce the Croatian process of developing the regional guidance centers. I hand over to you, Ms. Cesarevic.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for the introduction. I feel very privileged to have the possibility to present career guidance, lifelong career guidance system in Croatia, and especially with focus on lifelong career guidance centers we are developing now. I have to mention that career guidance, vocational guidance, has very long tradition in Croatia. Actually, as we are here in the university, Jyväskylä University, I have to mention that in Croatia, it was the first field of applied psychology starting long time ago, back to 1934, when first units for counseling in the employment services were set up. From the beginning, working on multidisciplinary principle with a team which include psychologist, counselor, counselor for information and a medical doctor to check and to assess both psychological side but also medical side, and to try to find out some options, evaluating of course the motivation and other elements. So I have to say that ELGPN has had a great impact on the development of lifelong career guidance system in Croatia. For the last several years, but even before we formally became members of this ELGPN society, we've been looking carefully on what was going on European level. So it was a great impact on setting up different strategies in different sectors, including employment and education, but also rehabilitation, social welfare system, and also some very concrete programs which include cooperation between at least education and employment side, such as active labor policy measures, then criteria for the educational policy, and so on and so on. The recent example is Youth Guarantee Program, which is recognized and in a close connection with the centers I'm going to tell you a little bit more. So when we speak about Youth Guarantee Implementation Program in Croatia, then we have developed programs and activities on two levels. On national level, there is a prerequisite, let's say. We set up conditions, preconditions, for tracking needs. Needs meaning young people not in employment, not in training or education. So recently an agreement has been signed between the Ministry of Education, Ministry of Labor, Croatian Employment Service and Pension Institute in order to track young people. So I could explain it a little bit more, but this means complex data exchange on all these pupils, students, and also people in employment or unemployment register. This is the baseline. We just started with it, so we will be looking for the results. It's the whole circle of this data exchange. So on regional and local level, Centers for Lifelong Career Guidance, we call them CISOK, it's abbreviation in Croatia, meaning practically the same as lifelong career guidance centers. We have developed special, let's say, activities and measures. And as we have first centers for the last 2 years on 11 areas in Croatia, one of the characteristic is flexibility. Then this youth guarantee program and activation, tracking, outreach and activation of needs is just one of the program that suits the characteristics and the possibility in service delivery of the centers. So when we start thinking about CISOK centers, it was back to 2006. Why? The purpose was to increase the availability of services to different target groups. On one hand, we have traditional customers such as unemployed, which are always connected with unemployment service. And on the other side, we have young people who are usually connected with school service delivery, but which are not enough. So there are a lot of others, including those two groups, who need something else and additional. People just don't want to come to the employment service thinking about, oh, I'm not unemployed, don't push the destiny. So the availability of services was one of the main reasons. Then also we would, that's why we would developing the centers in two directions, I would say. Possibility to come physically and have meeting with the counselor, delivering different levels of services, and on the other hand, to use online services. So it was a kind of parallel doing. One of the main characteristics is partnership-based model. Namely, when we start thinking about it, we knew that we want them to be outside the buildings of public employment centers, schools, everything, in the center of the towns available for the public. So we gathered together all relevant stakeholders from public, private, non-governmental institutions. And a good thing was that we have already a kind of partnership recognized on regional levels. This was and is a local partnership for employments. Every county in Croatia has developed a human resource management strategy dealing with different issues, including the issues that could be covered by these lifelong career guidance centers. So this is the main characteristics of the functioning. And of course, it has a unique image, but a great attention is paid to the specific local needs and local partnership. It could differ. The main principle is to have a so-called differentiated service delivery model, which means that for most of the clients, we offer self-help services, including online services, but also self-help services when they come to these centers. Then we have so-called brief assisted services, which means not many effort from the side of the counselor. And then the third group is this individualized, tailor-made approach. This is also the possibility to identify further needs and to inform them about further possibilities, including going for some additional services to some other providers. So we are facing, this is the process. Until now we have 11 centers. These centers have been financed by from different resources, national, local resources, but also through EU funds. ESF operational program 2014 till 2020, we planned to have some more centers, at least 22 of them until 2020. but also to put some more support to the already existed services. This includes also more staff, but also we are looking carefully about the outcomes, and I would say it is the process. For now, they are open for all, but according to our data, we could say that 30% of the clients are primary and secondary school pupils. One-third are unemployed people searching for additional support and additional services in comparison to what is offered by public employment service. And one-third are others, including employers, students, university students, parents, but also counselors and school teachers as well. We do it in close connection with the schools. We have organized and planned and publicly informing activities, but there is possibility also for the clients just to step in and ask for certain services. There are so many issues and challenges we are facing with, including identifying specific local and regional needs and target groups. I have mentioned the main ones, but it would depend upon regional and local needs and possibilities and resources to make priority upon the target groups as well as service delivery. So it's a kind of flexible system. We are monitoring carefully and exchanging our experience with our partners. So the other challenge is preserving resources, including premises, service delivery, financing, and so on. We have, as I mentioned, close cooperation with municipalities who offer their premises, which are for free for now or with very, very low costs. Then there is also partnership approach with NGOs in service delivery and some universities and so on. Not enough time to describe it in detail, but I could give some more details for those interested in. So it is also important to raise public awareness on the importance of lifelong career guidance. As I mentioned, lifelong career guidance issues have been mentioned in, I would say, most important different strategies. But strategies is one thing, it is on the paper, it is in the mind of policymakers, but the citizens are those for whom it is all prepared. They have to recognize sometimes they are not informed on one side, and on the other, sometimes we are all living in a world of so many information, so you have to manage information and to know exactly what they could get, what kind of service in these centers, and in which way it differs from the other providers. And then there is also a challenge in performance management because, as I've mentioned, public employment service has been delivering lifelong career guidance centers for a long, long period of time, both for unemployed adults on the register, on the PES register, employed persons, But also we have very long tradition in cooperation with schools, including especially pupils finishing their compulsory school, thinking about their secondary school choices, and we have very good cooperation with the Ministry of Education and on regional levels and local levels with schools in helping pupils, especially those facing different kind of possible obstacles, including health obstacles, behavioral obstacles, learning and so on, difficulties, to allow or to recommend them choices and to give them additional support in their further vocational development but also later career development. This very, very good cooperation, it really is, between the employment sector and the educational sector is, I strongly believe in, one of the main factors. This vocational guidance, career guidance, services we are delivering, it is the fact that Croatia has very low percentage of early school leaving. Actually, it is the lowest in Europe. It is under 4%. And I firmly believe, and I'm sure of it, that vocational guidance, career guidance, and this partnership approach in which we have a very long tradition, especially with schools, and now we are delivering it to all the citizens, plays one of the key roles. Thank you very much.
We are now having the poll question for you.
Oh, yeah.
So, Mr. Sirevic mentioned a couple of national challenges they have been facing in Croatia, but thinking of your interest in future cooperation, reflect one of those challenges. Which one of them would be most fruitful for further mutual policy learning? Identification of the local needs, target groups, identification of resources, how to raise public awareness of the importance of guidance, and how to improve the performance management of the regional centers. Think of mutual learning in the future, your own national challenges. This seems to be a more challenging question. How to raise the public awareness? How would you reflect this from your experiences when you were developing the centers?
Yeah, We are trying. It's the process. It's constant process. For example, in July this year, we have set up a new e-guidance portal, which is available through internet, and the results show that in this first week of setting up, there were a lot of media's campaigns and so on. Then the visits were pretty high. Then after a while, it was summer, everybody on their holidays and so on. It is the constant process. A lot of informing, not only through media, through website, but also our experience is, like in every other case, to speak about your own experience, to share it with your colleagues, with friends, and so on. This is most important, especially when we speak about young people, because we know that one of the most the way how they choose their secondary school or university is the where my friend is going, maybe to think to go together. So, yeah.
And there was one question on the wall about the real autonomy of the centers. You mentioned that the centers are autonomous. So can you please elaborate a little bit? What does this center autonomy mean?
Yeah. Formally, they are established by Croatian Employment Service, because somebody has to take care of it, including responsibility in different aspects. But from the first moment that we were planning to establish them, somebody has to take care of it and to start the story, let's say. But from the first moment we plan it to be the process where more and more other partners would take their responsibility on their shoulders. That is why we used this, as I mentioned, this local initiative for employment, which are established in all counties. So it differs upon a specific situation. Sometimes the employers are very engaged in it. Sometimes schools, sometimes some of non-governmental organizations. But as I mentioned, it's a question of premises, of staffing, and so on. Through ESF funding, we have planned to establish at least 11 more services, including the equipment and also some percentage of the salaries and so on, information materials and so on and so on. Part of it is organized by the budget, and but also part of it in different cases is delivered by our partners, such as service delivery, premises, some kind of equipment, and so on.
All right. Thank you very much, Mirjana.
Okay.
And now we will continue with...
Yeah, excuse me, right. Just the last slide for okay. those who are interested in to get information about the possibility to access different websites. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. We will continue with questions and comments and discussions from the audience, and Jana and Raimo, they will be acting as facilitators.
Yep. Thank you very much for your contributions and also the interactive discussions using the online tools. I picked up some of the issues and how we are using this half an hour we take some of the questions we might address to the speakers, but we give you also an opportunity to talk to the person next to you. I picked some elements. There was one question in relation to whether the face-to-face services are necessary or should it be only online. But if you on the first line, one of the features and principles of the one-stop centers was the customer choice. So in a way, when we think of the different level of readiness of the need, it might be useful that we think of the perspective of the users and try to do this multi-channeled approach. And the second question in relation to the Finnish one-stop centers, there were quite detailed questions about how many people, what are the services, and who is doing what. As Dr. Savomäki mentioned, the pilot has just started, and there are different models in different contexts, in urban and also rural areas. So this means that some of these questions are on progress. But the questions that you addressed are valuable when they are identifying further needs. And Pasi, if you want to comment on the current situation.
Yes, I can comment. Within a year, our one-stop guidance centers amount has increased from maybe 3 or 4 to up to about 30 within a year. And it's we have been, it's been a time where those centers have found those service providers together. They have combined them. And there's been a lot of work. And just now we are, and now we have to say that we have, as a coordination project, we have a lack of data. What's happening? What are the customers? Where are they coming from? Where are they going to? And just now we are collecting this system, how we can count it. Them. And of course, in each one-stop guidance centers, there are counting and there are numbers, but they are collected by very very different kind of systems, and that's our problem now. Yeah.
But I'm aware that the coordination unit is integrating external evaluation, but also research is connected to the implementation of the centres, as Dr. Savomäki mentioned earlier in his speech. And I picked up also one comment from Germany, that it's difficult to find a common vision how to create the centres. And this relates to the administrative structure of the country. We have countries which have more centralized and decentralized administration mechanisms, and in some countries the regions have quite big autonomy in designing their own services. And that's why it's important that the common framework that is discussed, we have found out that regional forums or regional fora or other kind of representative structures have turned out to be really helpful in defining the understanding of the framework. But I'm asking Jana, did you find any burning issues or themes before we give the time to the audience?
I've invited them to if you have some more questions,
I just invited if you have some more questions, please go, because presenters can also respond even if we can't reply to all of them. So Sandra was active already to respond in many of the questions that you raised.
And many of you can use the breaks when you are addressing the questions either to our speakers or the regional heads of the current local centres. But we have a question for you. During the next, let's say, five, six minutes, turn to your neighbour or two or three people together and speak to each other and think based on what you heard. What might be concrete questions that need to be solved and actions taken in creating a coherent, integrated one-stop guidance centre approach or creating their centres? And you can reflect some policy steps or the questions that need relate to policy steps or to service delivery, or how to strengthen the user perspective, the voice of the young people or users. You can spend a couple of minutes, I mentioned 6 to 10 minutes, write the comments on the wall. We pick up some of the from the wall, but we give you also opportunity to present them orally. So it's time for you. And you can introduce yourself to your neighbor if you don't know them. Dear colleagues, sorry to interrupt this intensive discussion, but let's pick up some themes for further reflection. I was reading the wall, and one item I picked out: customer choice or gatekeeping. Customer choice or gatekeeping, and this is quite challenging theme. What do we mean by guidance? Is it gatekeeping? Then it means that I'm getting the gate. I'm thinking from a supplier perspective. But if we think of the emerging new technology or the recent technology, we don't have the monopoly anymore. And the co-careering as a term means that we are co-constructing the information and the data what we are using in the process. We can have a dialogue, but it takes place with or without the help of career practitioners. So in a way, it's an issue that relates to the career management skills, which was emphasized very strongly in the Scotland case. The second theme I picked up, that we need to inform the politicians, and we need to have a transparent communication. And I think one of the outcome of the 9 years' work of the European Lifelong Guidance Policy Network was that we have been developing tools which can be used for mutual communication. We have been drawing from the examples of different countries, so these are the tools which can be presented, that this is the common understanding and definitions which emerge from the countries. So it relates very strongly to the public raising the awareness of the services. And then we come also to the role of the information communication technology. In one of the slides, it was illustrated that it's not only the interface for the service of the users, but it's modeling the elements and features and components which are included within the overall National Lifelong Guidance System. So in a way, that's one way to make the services transparent for both the users, the service providers and policymakers. So in a way, it's not a hierarchy, it's a structure of common knowledge formation. And then one of the themes was related to mandate. Who is in charge? Who is responsible? And I think this is a crucial element, that part of the dialogue and defining the common area of cooperation and understanding is agreeing what's the topic what we are doing, what is the actual service. And if it's a network, it requires new type of leadership, not only the leadership of the individual organizations which are involved, but looking at what is the interface and area of cooperation, collaboration, and then agreeing what type of if it's based on agreement, what kind of agreement is needed, and who is in charge, and who have the responsibilities of the activities. And this is commonly shared and also communicated to different users. And I think we have now the roaming microphones if you want to address some oral questions or oral comments on orally. Oh. Question. Croatia and Scotland pointed out cooperation with school sector as a success factor. What about the cooperation in financial issues? Do you have any comments on that? Concrete examples. There was a question to Scotland and Croatia.
Hi, in our collaboration with schools, the Scottish Government funds our work with schools, and they've also funded our early intervention work in schools that we're just about to take part in. And we do look at collaborative...
Perhaps you stand up. come here in the front, yes.
In Scotland, we're funded by Scottish Government because we are a statutory agency,
But we do work with partners around for specifically with young people who are long-term unemployed. We will bid with other partners to access other funding pots if there are specific areas of work that require to be looked at. But for the school part of it, we're very much funded by the government on that one.
Thank you. What about Croatia, about the concrete agreement on funding?
Precisely, there is no funding when we speak about schools. There are not direct funding, but they are sometimes delivering services. That is an indirect way of financing. And as I mentioned in my presentation, when we speak about funding, then there are from other partners some funding, from some employers, from municipalities in insuring premises, and also non-governmental, some of non-governmental organizations in delivering services. This is also kind of indirect support in funding, because the counselors, which are paid by Croatian Employment Service, could devote to some other service delivery at the time somebody else is delivering instead of them. So it's not just the question of a direct giving money, let's say, on a regular basis. It is a much more flexible way in different ways of supporting, including avoiding certain costs, which would be reality in a case that there is no support or not enough support from other partners in different ways.
Thank you. Any comments from the audience? Now we have Susan Kratz from the... okay. Any further questions? Tibor?
A bit more... practical, but also provocative one. And how we see beyond 2020, after the ESF will be gone? Probably it's not really a question in Scotland, because the Scottish government is paying for this, but as I understood, it's a case in Finland, it's a case in Croatia, many other countries. So again, the sustainability of all of these achievements.
Dr. Salamaki, if you want to comment.
Okay. I just said in my presentation that there are no extra funding in the future in public services. But of course we have extra funding. We have European Social Fund now.
No.
But I meant in the long run, we have no extra funding. And the situation is that we have, in those host organizations, they have their resources. And it's a question of this combining these resources in one-stop guidance centers. And but what we still need something extra. And it's coordination. Every one-stop guidance center needs coordinator. And that's the question which we have to solve in the future. And that's our challenge.
And please introduce yourself.
I am Bernhard Jenske from Berlin, Germany. This your answer brings me to an additional question. So the different partners in the centers, are they working under their own legal responsibilities, or the employment counselors under the Employment Act and the social and so on? This is in Berlin. We are also now creating so-called youth careers agencies. And for the 12 districts in Berlin, 200,000 to 350,000 people, counting each district, we will have one agency and consisting of the four different partners, the job centers and the employment offices, the representatives of the youth services of the local authority, and the school counselors. And the biggest partners of these staffing is job center and public employment service, and school only gives one counselor per district. And I see the problem that there are agreements of cooperation, but it is definitely stated all partners have to work under their own legislation. So, and we know the problems, especially in the job center, when we introduced it, putting together the social benefits entitlers and the employment benefits. So this causes enormous problems. So if a center like this should work good, though, it needs coordination and also leadership. That means that one should have the capacity to say how to work and how to. And there was a question. I remember it was a colleague of mine. We need qualification standards or standards that for instance, in the north of Finland or in the north of Berlin and in the south of Berlin will be the work the same, and that each user had the same opportunities to get the same quality service.
Can we get another question and then giving the opportunity for the speakers to respond these two questions?
Yeah, good morning everybody. Rolf Ackermann, Ministry of Education in Stuttgart, Germany. I'm close to all the fantastic presentations, and I'm really touched from the activities in Scotland. It's 5 million people. We have around 11 million people. Our guidance system works pretty in the southwest of Germany, and it's always only the small gap between education, training, and employment. But I'm looking forward. 1.5 million refugees in Germany, and we are very close to regions in Sweden with Gothenburg. We will have some seminars with politicians, with the head of guidance, of labor, of adult education and everything. We have all the same problems. We will do a lot of guidance, and it will become much better in future in the different levels of the European regions. But I see really the gap when we are talking informally around midnight with the associations of southwest metal industry. Germany is a carland, you know, Volkswagen. We have in southwest it's Mercedes-Benz, it's Porsche, it's Audi, and all that. And they telling us internally, because they are full of passion like you, of course we will do the best to integrate that people. We will do the best for finding new possibilities. But we are talking about low-skilled people. We are not talking about high-skilled. They will find their employment. They will find their guidance. But what is about a high number in the next 10, 15 years which are not ready for finding a job? Of course, the sentence was wonderful. We are not talking about employment, we are talking about employability. That's very important, and that's a main issue from guidance. But what we can do in ELGPN, in all our networks, to find completely new instruments and ethics for a plan B, for all that high percentage and people who are not ready for a job in the next 5-7 years in our different countries. And that is something where we, of course, we are talking about guidance, but we have also the responsibility for the politician to find some solutions and some completely new settings and pilots which are sustainable, which are realistic, and which are on a way to give some new visions for dead people who are really in trouble in future.
Thank you. We get brief comments from Croatia and Finland, and then we are starting to heading for a short break. Do you want, Mr. Cesarevic, do you want to comment on the...
Maybe to start with the last one about the tools for different target groups. We do have actually tools. I mentioned in my presentation that one of the strategy was a strategy for rehabilitation, which includes people with disability and other hard to place people. We have identified until now about 20 different target groups which belongs to this very very hard to with hard difficulties for or obstacles to enter labor market. So as all lifelong career guidance counselors and experts know, including the members of ELGPN, there are a lot of instruments and tools which counselors could use in dealing also in delivering services to these people which are very difficult to face reality sometimes, including skills and I would say competencies and chances to enter labor market. There are numerous of tools that we could use, and we are using different kind of support. Of course, sometimes it's not only the question of delivering services and raising the competencies. Sometimes, like in Croatia and unfortunately many other countries, European countries, the situation is there are simply labor market simply doesn't offer enough opportunities for all. But employability, yes, I agree, this is the concept. In the meantime, what we can do is national governments, policymakers, but also practitioners and people, including ourselves as persons, which are maybe at the moment we all have our jobs, but who knows what would happen tomorrow. Yeah, so this is the best we can do to get more and more competencies. So I would say it is the question of when we come to the country and the responsibility of government is to ensure mechanisms for service delivery, which has to be always in partnerships and which has to be flexible and accommodate to a very fast changing situation. So I think that there is no simple answer and it would differ from country to country and from region to region and from providers to provider.
Thank you. We brief comment for Dr. Samamäki. From Finland perspective.
In short, workers in one-stop guidance centers, they are working under their own legislation. And maybe we will face the same problem as you did. but a very good point was that coordination and between leading and leaders. And it's how can I say? We can buy these coordination resources, but the leading is another issue. But even though it's very important, and we are working with it in the future, in the near future, I think.
Thank you, Dr. Savomäki. And I think this is the end of the first session, and just pick up some themes which we come get back in more details at the end of the day. But the questions related to transparent policy, agreement, leadership, and also thinking about the quality and return of investment, and also in the how to have the mandate. But we are getting back to these questions after the further breaks. And just to inform you that all the slides, the materials will be available online. They will be sent to the emails when you registered, but we are uploading them to the same place where these videos will be available at the website of the National Center for Life and Guidance Expertise, and Jana will upload the addresses on the wall. So I hand over to chairs at this point. Thanks.
Thank you all for your excellent comments. Okay, lunch is served now in this Pavilionki restaurant, and it is one step up, and you can find it there. And please come back 15 past 1. Enjoy your lunch.